5 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show. Happy Tuesday to you. Sarah mentioned it a second ago. Troy Lovello will be joining us about 15 minutes from now, coming off the Diamondbacks 7-5 loss to the A's today.
This was not a good loss. This was a bad loss.
Yeah. 5-0 lead, 5-1 lead late. Bullpen just fell apart, and the A's were able to rally for a come-from-behind victory, 7-5.
Yep, and we'll talk with him about that, about kind of the issues facing the team right now. Mad Bum's performance last night. The good news, Zach Gallen pitched very, very well today, but the bullpen, given that they're down so many bodies, just faltered today and was not able to hold on to the lead that they had going into this game and really make Zach Gallen's return a success story. So we got Troy coming up in about 10 minutes from now here on the flagship home of the Diamondbacks. But we turn our attention to the Arizona Cardinals. Another mock draft today from Mel Kiper Jr. We are 2 weeks and 2 days away from the NFL draft. Oof. Yeah, right? And it's coming up here pretty quick. And the mock draft he put out there today was interesting because as soon as I saw the name, and I think you kind of had the same reaction, I thought, I don't know if the Cardinals are going to take him if he's there. And no. It's Caleb Farley, the cornerback out of Virginia Tech.
I think a lot of teams are going to have those question marks on this guy with the knee injury and then the back injury and then the back injury again. He's had two surgeries since January on that back. So I don't think anybody, you know, you look at him and say, okay, he's a converted wide receiver, but he's got good size and he's got good skill. So I don't know that that's the issue there. It's just he didn't play last year, and he's coming off of two surgeries on his back, and it's just risky. Like, it is. It's risky. So that's the thing. Do you want to take a kid at that spot that is, that's got that red flag? And it's a red flag. I mean, you can't deny it. Now, him and his agent are doing everything they can to say, I'm healthy, I'm fine, I'm going to be great. But if you're a team, you've got to have him flagged because of the injuries.
Yeah, Mel Kiper, in writing about this pick today in his mock, called Caleb Farley his top-ranked corner. And he said, but even I admit, he could be the third one off the board depending on the medical checks. He had back surgery last month. You mentioned that, a microdiscectomy. Wasn't able to work out his pro day. Teams weren't able to see him up close after he opted out last year. Kiper Jr. was on Bickley and Murata last week, and he raved about Caleb Farley.
He's a great cover guy. He's a former wide receiver, former high school quarterback. Had an ACL in 2017, then the back surgery in 2019, then he had another back surgery prior to the draft. So skill-wise, Justin Fuente I talked to back in August, the head coach at Virginia Tech, and he loves the kid's talent and potential. Long, athletic, great ball skills. Had to get a little tougher. Had he played this year, you would have seen it. Needed to see better tackling. But I think cover-wise, he has few peers.
Back surgery in your 20s.
All I can hear is red flag, red flag, red flag.
Well, that's why I don't think the Cardinals take him. I don't think the Cardinals take him. I really don't. But, I don't know. Maybe they will. I wouldn't bet a mortgage payment on it. But I just think if he's there, if Surtain's gone and Horn's gone and he's there, I don't think he's their pick. I just think it's too risky. I think for a lot of teams, they're going to see that as a risk. Look, honestly, how many people have back surgeries when they're 20 years old?
Yeah, not too many people. And between the ACL, between the back surgeries, the fact that he opted out, not that he didn't have good reason to, but there's just many unknowns. And look, here, if you're drafting somebody to be your starting cornerback opposite Malcolm Butler, then I really think you definitely can't take him. But in Kiper's,
he may not even be ready until like right around preseason, too.
Right, depending on how. Yeah. And like you said, you've seen the agent and him come out, try to do a lot of damage control, make sure everybody knows, oh, he's fine, he's okay. Got a draft profile here of Caleb Farley. We already played our game, so we already know who's voicing this one. It's Sarah Cazell on Caleb Farley.
Caleb Farley, cornerback, Virginia Tech.
There's a lot to like about Farley, his size and his speed, first and foremost. When Farley is at his best, he's in press coverage. He has a good one-hand and two-hand jam, but is also patient enough to wait out receivers and then latch himself onto their hips. He also stays in excellent position downfield before making a play on the ball. Farley is exceptional at recognizing routes, aggressive against the run, fights his way through blockers, and is a sound tackler. While at times he gets turned around on some routes and allows receivers to cross his face, Farley has all the tools that every NFL team looks for in a cornerback. NFL comp, Ravens cornerback Jimmy Smith.
I think I've been hanging around you a long time because I'm starting to do this kind of process of elimination thing when I look at stuff like this.
That's what I do.
I look at this mock draft, and I started doing this process of elimination exercise.
That's my go-to
I know. That's your go-to move. Yeah. I know, and I'm not trying to steal your go-to move.
You can borrow it.
So Mel Kiper had five quarterbacks gone in the top 10.
Okay. Three receivers.
Three receivers gone before the Cardinals pick.
Two corners.
Two corners gone before the Cardinals make their pick. And then I start thinking, rather than looking at who the Cardinals take, I look at who's left. Okay. Here's who is left when the Cardinals, he had them picking at 16.
Exactly how I do it.
Caleb Farley was left. Quiddy Pay from Michigan was left. Greg Newsome. Najee Harris, Travis Etienne was left. Elijah Vera Tucker was left. And it's, I think I've been hanging around you for a long time that I started looking at it like, and I started looking at all of those names, and as much as I want them, as much as I think they need to find a long-term cornerback in this draft.
You don't want to force it at 16.
You don't want to force it. And among those players, man, my eyes just keep going back to Elijah Vera Tucker.
That's who I think the pick's going to be if the two corners are off the board and the three wide receivers are off the board, which I think they will be. I think the pick's going to be the USC guard.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's the guy that makes, I think that they'll take, if it's, so when you look at it, okay, if Farley's available and Vera Tucker's available, I think they go Vera Tucker. More of a sure thing. He's a really, really good offensive guard. He's really good. You get a great offensive lineman at 16, and not a guy that's had two back surgeries and missed the season with an ACL injury. You eliminate the risk. You go get a guy that's a really good player. Now, the thing about this, too, you got a guard, and you know what? Your best guard next year could be, you know, you could move on from Justin Pugh in a year if you wanted to.
Sure.
You know, I mean, if you could move on from him and have Vera Tucker ready to go. The best teams have players ready to go when their players, other players get older and they decide to move on.
Good offensive lineman, assuming he's going to be good.
One of the best in this whole draft by far.
It's never a bad thing to draft one of those early. It's not sexy. It's not the kind of thing that's going to sell a bunch of jerseys. It's not the kind of thing that's going to, but it's in terms of solid, steady, you know, how do you win football games? I mean, Kyler Murray's been talking about the offensive line all year. They've made the offensive line a priority, whether it was the trade for Rodney Hudson or whether it was bringing back Kelvin Beachum. I mean, the moves they've made on the offensive line have kind of been in part with the core of what they've done. The hope still is that one of the other cornerbacks are there. I don't think there's any way Patrick Surtain is there. J.C. Horn, I'm starting to really doubt that he's... I think had Caleb Farley been totally healthy and had no issues, then maybe J.C. Horn would have been there.
Yeah.
Now I think that these injuries are really starting to push into people's consciousness and they're worried about it. I don't think J.C. Horn's going to be there.
I don't think he's going to be there either. I think one of the reasons why is I think just because Farley is just too much of a risk for these teams. He's going to get picked somewhere where you say, okay, the value's worth it. But at 16, it might not be worth it. It might be, you know, later on.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I'd be surprised if he's the pick.
We got a solid performance from Zach Gallen today in his 2021 debut, but how concerned is Torey Lovello about the rest of his pitching staff? The D-backs manager will join us, and we'll ask him next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Your exclusive home of the D-backs.
Diamondbacks.
98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Torey Lovello joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball. Presented by PNC Bank. Financial tools and tech to help make things easier.
Our weekly visit with the manager of the Diamondbacks, Torey Lovello, typically every Tuesday at 2:30. But the Diamondbacks were playing a game today at 2:30.
He was a little busy.
He was a little busy. We didn't want to bother him in the middle of the game by putting a phone to his face and asking him to talk to us.
I think he should have done that anyway. It would have been great.
You think so? Right in the middle of the game, he does his weekly segment with us. I don't think that would have gone over very well. So instead, we rescheduled Torey, and he joined us after today's game. Diamondbacks lose to the A's 7-5, and joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, manager of the Diamondbacks, Torey Lovello, here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Hi, Torey. Thanks for being flexible with us. We appreciate it today.
Yeah, no worries, guys. Glad I could join you.
Well, let's start with the outstanding performance over four innings by Zach Gallen. Nice shot in the arm for you guys. 82 total pitches. I know you wanted to keep him between 75 and 85. He did throw eight curveballs, but give me the thought. What did you see with him on the mound today?
Yeah, I saw a lot of velocity, a lot of high octane stuff, and it was sharp and late, and exactly the way I remembered it prior to him getting injured. So, really excited that he's able to throw curveballs and come out of it with pain free. You know, I know that he's been working hard at the alt site to make today happen, but something's just a little bit different, and you kind of ramp up that intensity to the highest level. And for him to get through it the way he did and feels as good as he did, you're right. It's a perfect way to look at it. It's a shot in the arm.
I feel bad asking this at this point in time because I know he just made one start, but how much thought, and I'm sure it's a lot, how much thought have you given to what exactly your plan for him is this mm-hmm. year, given innings and not wanting to burden him too much after last year's short year? What's kind of your plan with him going forward?
I can tell you exactly what my plan would be, and that's to pitch him as much as we possibly can without overcooking him or asking his body and shoulder and arm to do too much. So whatever that red line is, obviously we never cross it here, but we're going to get as close to that as possible by remaining safe. And we're going to get every bit of work that we possibly can out of him because he's one of our guys, and he's going to help us win some baseball games.
Look, this was a tough one. I mean, you had a 5-0 lead when Gallen left. I think it was 5-1, and the bullpen completely faltered. Clark failed, Ginkle failed, Swarzak failed, Lopez failed. This wasn't the way it was supposed to be. I mean, you were supposed to go Tyler Clippard to Davinsky to Soria, and you don't have any of those guys. But I know you're not an excuse guy, but you know, big failure by the bullpen today.
Yeah, look, you're right. It wasn't what we wanted. It wasn't how they wanted to execute. And, you know, the bullpen took it on the chin today. We got to get everything to click in one game for a long time, for not two games or three games, but for 10 games, for 20 games, and maybe a little bit of a breakdown periodically from one of the departments. You know, so when we can put the offense, the defense, the starting pitching, and the relief pitching together and get guys healthy and get guys back into the roles that they're used to performing under, we're going to be just fine. But in the meantime, you're right. I don't want to make excuses because it's an opportunity for somebody to step up and say, hey, it's my turn. Let me show you, Torrey, what I could do. But, you know, there are some hiccups. We made some mistakes. We made pitches to the wrong location, to the wrong guys. And when you do that to veteran type of guys and guys that can put the barrel on the baseball, you're going to pay for it.
We know Clipper was out like 6 weeks, but give me Davinsky left for personal reasons. Do you have any update on when he'll be back?
I don't, unfortunately, I want to respect that situation as much as I possibly can. We're hoping that at some point in time, obviously, that he joins us, but it's undetermined right now. And, you know, Soria is healing. He's still doing his throwing program while he can't really get on his legs and overextend and get on a mound yet. That time is coming. He's feeling very good. And, you're right. We miss those guys, but I want to make sure that I keep saying it because I know the guys listen and I know the listeners listen. It's time for young arms to get those meaningful moments and keep learning and growing and take advantage of the opportunity.
Torrey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. Madison Bumgarner last night was, once again, it was a struggle for him. I heard your comments after the game about how, you know, early in these at-bats, finishing these at-bats, the things that he's not doing. What is the plan for him to try to continue to find what it is that he needs to do for you guys? How are you guys going to attack what's wrong, or are you attacking what's wrong with Madison Bumgarner right now?
Yeah, that's what we do here. You know, we don't sit still. We don't say go figure it out on your own. We're here, and we're gonna back him. The thing that Bum's so used to doing is carrying organizations on his shoulders. You know, you look at that downtown ballpark in San Francisco. He practically built that thing, right? He put that entire city on his back. And what I told him last night is, you don't have to worry about doing that here. We got 25 other players. You got a very supportive staff built around you. You got a front office that's here for you, and we're going to walk with you, and don't put so much pressure on yourself to be that guy. Just go out and be the best version of yourself. Bloom where you're planted, and just keep going. Keep making positive strides. And the stuff, you know, inside of the game, and I know this is not a cop-out, you know, because he's getting banged around a little bit, but inside of the game, the velocity is showing some improvements. We just got to get that fastball command. That's what it is. When he gets that fastball command, he can pitch off of that, and he can become very deceptive and get easy, quick outs.
Look, I'm going to be honest, Torrey. Positive strides, I just don't see it. I see a guy that's giving up 22 hits and 13 walks in 13 innings. He was 1-4 last year with a 6.48 ERA. He went into yesterday's game with an ERA of 11. It actually went up. I mean, he got bailed. I mean, Nick Ahmed made an unbelievable play with runners on second and third. That could have been, you know, a double in the gap and scored two runs. Nick saved him with that tremendous play that he turned into a double play. You know, and I know you've got to say all the right things here, but there has to be some concern that he just has not been able to get guys out consistently.
Yeah, well, there's concern for any of our athletes that are performing up to what we feel like they're capable of doing. So, yeah, he's no exception. You know, I know that it would be great to just take your hands off of an athlete and say that he's going to figure it out on his own, but that's clearly not the case. So, Bum is not an exception. He's had an unbelievable track record. He's been able to go out and perform at a very elite level, and we're going to back him. We're going to support him. We're going to continue to teach him, and he's accepting all of the teaching from the coaches, and that's really important to us.
For how long do you back him for? I mean, you can't keep throwing him out there every fifth day if he's not giving you five innings and giving you quality starts, right?
Yeah, that's not my decision. While the 26 guys are here, I'm coaching them the best way that I know how, and putting them in the best position I possibly can. So, yeah, that's not my decision. I want to make sure that these guys get what they need from me, get what they need from the staff about believing, about pushing and going. So, you know, look, Bum needs to find out where that fastball is going, work off of that, and that's going to be our focus between these next starts.
All right. As far as the pitching staff goes, Luke Weaver and the performance that he had on Sunday afternoon, how much of a shot in the arm was that? And B, we've seen the very best of him and the very worst of him over the last couple of years. What is it that would lead us to convince that this version of him is the, for lack of a better word, the real version of Luke Weaver?
Yeah, you know, because he's done it for a couple months before getting hurt. I think last year there was a little bit of an undercurrent of, you know, where am I, what's going on, and how do I feel, and then maybe started playing or pitching uphill once things started to back up on him. So he's a little bit ahead of it right now, and things are going in a very good direction. So the reason why I would say you guys can believe on the high side with him is that he's done it. There's a lot of octane in that arm, and you know, we're simplifying his plan to try and allow him to go out and duplicate pitches and throw balls in the right spot without doing too much in the area where he could be hurt. So, you know, eliminating certain pitches at certain times, following the game plan, and when he does, and you can see what he did. He was living at the top of the strike zone in the strike zone, and getting a lot of swing and miss. He was driving pitches down. It was a pretty impressive effort. Hitting spots with pitching, absolutely the top priority. So when he does that, or any of our guys do that, they're going to be just fine.
All right, give me the honest thing here with him pitching. When he had that no-hitter, you got to be thinking, my God, I can only go so long with him. At what point would you have taken him out?
Man, I am the Grim Reaper at times. You remember I took A.Y. Alex Young out of a game? He had a perfect game with like 68 or 72 pitches, something like that. I have to do one thing. I sometimes have to be the parent in the room and say, look, today in a perfect game and a no-hitter scenario, I am all for it, but never at the expense of you walking off the mound and saying, I can't pitch again at this level for 10 days or maybe more. And with Luke coming off of what he did last year, I had a number in mind. It was, you know, it was a little bit over what he would normally get, you know, maybe in the 110, 115 range, but I was not coming off of that.
When Zach Gallen's next start, you wanted him in that 75 to 85 range. I imagine you bumped that up just a little bit for how long he can go in the game.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. You know, the medical team and the people that have supported him and pushed him out back onto the baseball field will help me make that decision. So we'll come up with a number, and whatever it is, once again, we're not going to exceed it.
Thanks for the time, Torrey. We appreciate it. Best of luck on the road trip.
Okay, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Skip.
Torrey Lovello joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity Luxury Cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, devastating news for the Nuggets and good news, though not the way they would have wanted it, for the Phoenix Suns. Jamal Murray's ACL injury. How is that going to impact the Western Conference playoff race? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, 5:30 in the afternoon here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Thanks for hanging out with us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You would never, ever, ever root for it to go down like this. But at the same time, to deny its impact and how it helps the Phoenix Suns would be irresponsible. Jamal Murray blowing out his knee last night is horrible, horrible news for the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, their worst fears realized. Their star player goes down.
But it does eliminate, for all intents and purposes, a team that you really needed to worry about in the Western Conference.
I think it eliminates them from being a serious title contender.
You know,
I mean, if you took Devin Booker off the Suns or Chris Paul off the Suns, I mean, Jokic is the best player on that team. Murray's the second best player. 3 weeks ago, they went all in. I mean, they traded two players and a first round draft pick to go get Aaron Gordon. They were all in. But you take a guy that's shooting 40% from three. He's such a dynamic player. He's actually shooting 43% since the All-Star break from 3-point range. You take them off that roster. Now, they've got other players that they'll try to rely on, but he's such a big part of their success. Yeah. I just don't know that they could overcome that.
And I don't say that to celebrate it. I just say it to acknowledge it. You know, let's acknowledge what we know to be a fact and what we...
Murray's out and Monty Morris is in.
Yeah.
Big difference.
And that, you know, again, we're not celebrating the fact that it helps the Phoenix Suns, but let's acknowledge the fact that helps the Phoenix Suns. Because as Brian Windhorst said today... I mean, you lose Jamal Murray for the playoffs, he's irreplaceable.
Monty Morris is a terrific player, and he's one of the best backup point guards in the league. But what you don't, what you can't replace is a guy who, in a 50-50 situation, fourth quarter, game five, 2-2, who can carry you home. And I know that Nikola Jokic has that ability, but we saw in the playoffs last year that Murray was a special player, a difference-making player. You can't replace that in the playoffs.
You can't. Here's more Windhorst from the jump today on how this, what this does to Denver's title chances.
If you look at the odds that the casinos have done today, yesterday the Nuggets were 10 or 12 to 1 in places. Right now they're 100 to 1. And I don't want to reduce it to a number, but that right there says what this kind of what this injury means to their chances.
Yeah, it's devastating.
You can't. You know, you got Jokic. Jokic got benched the other day, believe it or not. I mean, he was not hustling on a play and they pulled him out.
Talk about the Celtics game in the fourth quarter. He was really jawing with the referees. He was letting the referees get in his head too much. So Mike Malone sat him. I saw that. Yeah.
You got him. You got Michael Porter Jr. And you do have Aaron Gordon. But, you know, Murray was such a key part of everything they did. So, I mean, I could see why the odds are the way they are. Now, now as a defense, right, you don't have to worry about one of the premier guards in the league. You can focus more of your attention on, you know, if you want to shut down Jokic, you can focus more of your attention there or on Porter Jr. or even on Aaron Gordon. You have other options defensively.
Look, they're still a very good team. I mean, Nikola Jokic is still one of the best players in the league. Michael Porter Jr. is a rising star in this league. Aaron Gordon has really settled into his role. But if we were making a list, we did this on Monday. You start talking about a list of like major threats in the Western Conference. There were some people who thought the Denver Nuggets, remember we were talking about power rankings yesterday and whether the Suns deserve to be number one or not, like they were in that NBA.com power ranking. There were some who believed the Denver Nuggets deserved to be the number one team in the power rankings, that they were right now today the best team in the NBA. Well, they're not now. And so when you start looking at major threats in the Western Conference, you assume that when LeBron and AD come back, that they'll be a major threat. You know that Utah is going to be a major threat. You know that the Clippers are going to be a major threat. I think this eliminates the Denver Nuggets as a major threat in the Western Conference. And now the Nuggets lost last night to the Warriors. The Jazz inexplicably lost at home last night to the Wizards. Bradley Beal basically begging for minutes in the fourth quarter because he was on a minutes restriction. He had a big night. They overcame a huge night from Donovan Mitchell. That was a Wizards team that the Suns handled on Saturday. And they went into Utah and ended the Jazz's 24-game home win streak. Suns got some help last night. The Lakers lost to the Knicks. The Suns are only a game and a half back, and only a game back in the loss column from the Utah Jazz for the number one spot in the Western Conference.
Yeah, like I'm looking at, boy, this is a game seven last year against the Clippers. The Jazz played the Lakers in the Western Conference, the Nuggets. The Nuggets played the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. But before that, the Nuggets went seven games with the Clippers. In game seven, Jamal Murray, 15 out of 26 from the field, 6 3-pointers. He had 40 points. He had 5 assists. He had 4 rebounds. I mean, he put up a 40 spot on the Clippers to help the Nuggets win that game and get to the Western Conference Finals. That's what you don't have.
You don't have
you
that.
You just don't have that guy's gone.
Yeah.
That guy could that could take over a big playoff game and go for 40. That guy, he's now gone. Now you've got other players that are really good. Nikola Jokic is a great player, but that guy cannot help you anymore.
Turning our attention from the top of the Western Conference to the bottom of the Western Conference, how do you feel in general about the play-in tournament in the NBA this year?
I'm okay with it this year. I don't like it for after this. I don't. Because as we talked about this earlier, there's four teams right now that are scheduled to be the 9 and 10 seeds in the Eastern and Western Conference. None of them have a winning record. None of them have a winning record. So they're all 500 or below. So we've got mediocrity here, and we're rewarding mediocrity and bad play. I don't want teams under 500 in the playoffs.
The reason I ask is because Luka Doncic, who is the star of the team that is currently the seventh seed right now, the Dallas Mavericks, basically came out last night and said, I just don't get it. I don't understand why we're doing this. I'd play the sound for you, but I heard it earlier, and he's kind of have a hard time understanding him. He just didn't like the idea of play-in games. And a lot of people are looking like, well, yeah, of course you don't. You're in the play-in game. You shouldn't be. But everyone else likes it. You're not going to be happy with it because you're the team that's going to be stuck having to go through it. You're the team that's going to have to. And if that, look, all Dallas has to do is win one basketball game and they're the seventh seed, assuming this holds the way it is. I like it, but I would hate it if I were the Dallas Mavericks. Like if the Phoenix Suns were the seventh seed right now, if the Phoenix Suns were sitting at number seven,
I would not be happy.
I wouldn't be happy. I wouldn't be happy that for a team that hadn't been in the playoffs for 10 years, now I've got to rely on this gimmick to make sure I'm in the playoffs. Yeah. I'd be pissed. I'd be very unhappy about it.
It's almost like the baseball wild card, that one game. Hey, you get one game.
It's exactly like the baseball
wild card. Really? Like I just played 162? I mean, am I good enough or am I not good enough?
Right. Or the play-in game in the NCAA tournament. Hey, I'm either in the field of 64 or I'm not. Am I in or am I out? You know, but it's like, no,
they're just adding these options.
Of course.
Yeah, I can understand. I understand what Luke and Dalla and Mark Cuban is saying.
But
and if they have the 7 seed, why should they have to play the 10 seed?
Sure.
Why?
But I also think that if I've got no horse in the race, right, as just a fan of basketball, the wild card game, the play-in game in the NCAA tournament, it's an instant elimination game, right? It's a game 7. Just boom, right there for you. And so if I don't have a team that I'm rooting for, sure I want to see 7 play 8 and 9 play 10.
As a fan?
As a fan, right? Yeah. It's a very entertaining.
Isn't that what it's about?
At the end of the day, yeah.
But it's also about, I mean, the credibility of the sport with, you know, putting these teams that are below 500.
Right.
Like, come on.
Especially
man.
To and the point Luka was trying to make. Man, we play 72 games to figure out who should be in the playoffs. We really need two more? I mean, come on. Isn't that what the whole regular season is for? Is to decide who should get those 8 spots? And I get that. But on the other hand, as a fan, I'm not going to sit here and deny that when that play-in tournament rolls around, oh, you better believe I'm going to be watching because those are elimination games. It's like game 7 of a playoff series when Dallas plays Memphis or when San Antonio plays Golden State. I want to watch those games. Those are going to be entertaining games.
Yeah. I'll watch them, but I think you realize that those teams that are 9 and those 9 and 10, if a 9 and 10 pulls an upset, they're not beating a 1 or 2.
No.
Just not going to happen.
And as a Suns fan, you almost root for an upset, so you play a lesser team in the first round if you're the 2 seed. Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Diamondbacks, you heard Torrey say it just a second ago, Torrey Lovello, have yet to really have a complete game where everything clicks into place. But for Madison Bumgarner, what can they do to try to get him right? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. All right, here's your Coors Light. What's on tonight? The games that we are going to watch this evening. Brought to you by Coors Seltzer. When you drink a Coors Seltzer, you help save the Salt River, Gambo. Tonight, 7 o'clock tip time, the Heat taking on the Phoenix Suns.
And what does that mean for the Miami Heat?
Bad news for the Heat!
Bad news for the Heat!
Oh, there was some extra sauce on that one today. I could feel it. Jordan, dragged it out. Oh,
got me a little choked up there. I didn't want to be accused of, you know, doing it halfway the way Sarah called me out yesterday.
Jordan was like hacking up a lung as soon as he did that.
Yeah.
That was good, Jordan. You brought it.
Takes a lot out of you.
You both brought it. Yeah.
Takes a lot out of you.
I'm glad I don't have to.
Yeah.
Glad I don't have to do that. I don't think I'd have the energy to finish the rest of the show. You gonna be okay?
I only have like 10 more minutes. So, so I've been waiting until the end of the show for a lot of these. I'll get back to doing some in the beginning, but I'm on a streak here where we're doing it towards the end of the show.
Yeah.
So that way my heart doesn't hurt for the rest of the show.
It's 7 o'clock tip time here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, the Miami Heat and the Phoenix Suns. That is what's on tonight, brought to you by Coors Seltzer. Troy Lovello was on with us earlier today. Diamondbacks already lost 7-5 to the Oakland A's.
It's just a terrible loss. He had a 5-0 lead and a 5-1 lead.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. This isn't their fault, but like they were gonna rely on Devenski. And Clippard and Joaquin Soria to get them out of the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. And now, you know, they got to go with Anthony Senback.
Sorzak.
Senback. I want to send him back to any of the teams that he used to play for. He played for 14 of them. Send him back to any one of those teams he played for.
Technically, it was Ginkle who was given the blown save because he gave up the home run to Lowry, I think.
Okay, but what's Senback's ERA?
10.80.
Send him back. Who wants him?
Madison Bumgarner's got a worse ERA.
Yeah, I know. But we've railed on Bumgarner. But they're like the three main bullpen guys are out. I mean, that sucks for the D-backs. Listen, I root for this team as hard as I root for any team.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just that the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning guys are not available right now.
Yeah.
Two guys are hurt and one guy's on a personal leave. It's terrible.
And it would have been an entirely different setup trying to protect that lead that Zach Gallen had helped create because he pitched great today. He had 8 strikeouts in 4 innings, threw 82 pitches. He snapped off, 10 curveballs when it was all said and done. So even with that forearm injury, I think it was 10.
I got his stats here. He threw 82 pitches, 47 fastballs, 15 cutters, 12 changeups, and 8 curveballs.
Oh, 8 curveballs. Okay.
Yeah, so 47 fastballs, 15 cutters, 12 changeups, and 8 curveballs. His fastball percentage was higher. He relied more on that than he did. Like last year, his fastball percent was 39%. This year, it was 57%. In this game, it was 57%.
And his curveball percentage was down, but you'd expect that because that's the one that was giving him a little discomfort. Right, yeah. As far as the bullpen, we had Torrey Lovello on, and he said, look, I'm not going to make any excuses for him.
It wasn't what we wanted. It wasn't how they wanted to execute, and you know the bullpen took it on the chin today. We got to get everything to click in one game for a long time, for not 2 games or 3 games, but for 10 games, for 20 games, and maybe a little bit of a breakdown periodically from one of the departments. You know, so when we can put the offense, the defense, the starting pitching, and the relief pitching together, and get guys healthy and get guys back into the roles that they're used to performing under, we're going to be just fine. But in the meantime, you're right. I don't want to make excuses because it's an opportunity for somebody to step up and say, hey, it's my turn. Let me show you, Torrey, what I could do. But, you know, there are some hiccups. We made some mistakes. We made pitches to the wrong location, to the wrong guys. And when you do that to veteran type of guys and guys that can put the barrel on the baseball, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, I got to imagine until they get those 3 guys back that you talked about, Devenski and Clippard and Joaquin Soria, I think it's going to be a lot of hit and miss when it comes to the bullpen. Not quite sure what you're going to get. Not quite sure who you're going to get
it from. I liked Peacock. They sent him down.
Yeah, they did.
Yep.
He was good. He had been effective. I was kind of surprised to see, frankly, that they had sent him down because I thought they might rely on him a little bit. It's going to be a real grab bag for the next couple of weeks until they start getting some guys back in that bullpen, and I'm not really sure how they're going to be able to trust. But that is just one issue for the Diamondbacks. They have so many issues in front of them, and in particular, the Madison Bumgarner issue. How concerned is Torrey? And he joined us again just about a half hour ago. How concerned is he about Mad Bum?
I'm concerned for any of our athletes that are performing up to what we feel like they're capable of doing. So yeah, he's no exception. I know that it would be great to just take your hands off of an athlete and say that he's going to figure it out on his own, but that's clearly not the case. So Bum is not an exception. He's had an unbelievable track record. He's been able to go out and perform at a very elite level, and we're going to back him. We're going to support him. We're going to continue to teach him, and he's accepting all of the teaching.
Now, this is where you kind of stepped in, and I'm going to include the question here on this soundbite, which you asked a very pointed question to Torrey Lovello, and here's how he responded.
How long do you back him for? I mean, you can't keep throwing him out there every fifth day if he's not giving you 5 innings and giving you quality starts, right?
Yeah, that's not my decision. While the 26 guys are here, I'm coaching them the best way that I know how and putting them in the best position I possibly can. So, yeah, that's not my decision. I want to make sure that these guys get what they need from me, get what they need from the staff about believing, about pushing and going. So, you know, look, Bum needs to find out where that fastball is going, work off of that, and that's going to be our focus between these next starts.
What'd you think of that answer?
I mean, I think it's like, I think what he meant by it is like, you know, the GM puts the roster together and I manage the roster. I'm not deciding if he's going to get sent down to the minors or if he's going to get cut or anything. And as long as he's here, I'm going to back him and support him. That's what a good manager does. He supports his guys even through these tough times. Madison Bumgarner has been absolutely awful since he's become a Diamondback. I mean, he had two good starts at the end of last season, gave you a little bit of hope, but he got out of the gates with three really bad starts this year. And there's definitely a panic that's setting in because, you know, how many more is it going to be? I do think he will have good starts. I think he'll have a 6-inning start with 2 runs or less, a 7-inning start with 2 runs or less. I think he will have some of them, but I think the overall, I'm concerned that he's no longer, you know, a 1-2 or a 3 pitcher in Major League Baseball. I right now, if I had to win a game, he's the last guy I would pick on that rotation to win a game.
I think he'll have some of those starts too. He better have them soon because 2 or 3 more starts like this, and whether it's Torrey Lovello's decision, and he's right, it's not, but whether it's Torrey Lovello's decision or Mike Hazen's decision, they're going to have to do something about Madison Bumgarner because Torrey Lovello, as the manager, is not going to be able to look the other 25 guys on that roster in the eye and say, we are doing everything we can to win every single game.
You're right.
When you're rolling Madison Bumgarner out there every fifth day. You can't say that with any credibility if you keep putting him out there and he keeps giving you 4 2/3 and giving up 6 runs. You won't have any credibility with your players if you say that.
So how many more starts before you come up with a fake injury to put him on the IL or something like that? I mean, is, you know, 1 more start, 2 more starts, 3 more starts? I mean, this can't, you know, if he's going to continue to go out there and pitch as poorly as this, you're going to burn your bullpen out really quickly. And
you're not going to give yourself a chance to win that game.
You're going to have a chance to win. Yeah.
You're going to take the field knowing we don't have a chance to win the game tonight. And you can't, if you're starting from that square, you're not going to go anywhere that you need to go as long as he's still pitching like this.
And it could have been so much worse yesterday if Nick Ahmed didn't save him with that great defensive play.
We are out of here. Luke Lipinski is up next with a half-hour edition of The Rundown. We'll see you tomorrow straight at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.